Emily Kaplan, and welcome to the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we discuss spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode number 14, Intelligence. Today you'll hear about the girly, feminine nature of intelligence. You'll hear about the intelligence of knitters. You'll hear some familiar words from our past. We'll talk about the way information and intelligence slip in the back door. And of course, a surprise ending. The spiritual principle of intelligence is divinely feminine. It's about how you read between the lines as life's story presents itself to you. It's not about IQ, as it is in common vernacular. That kind of intelligence is about synapses and brain associations. As a spiritual principle, intelligence is about how your heart mind picks up the clues about the deeper meaning of communication and then informs your whole body and your being. Spiritual intelligence doesn't rely just on words, tone, and body language. It also relies on energy, vibrations, nature, sensation, and it measures all information, sound, smell, touch, vocabulary, implication, against the feather of truth. Intelligence thrives within what we call the feminine matrix of creation. Creativity, the principle that was the topic of our last podcast, becomes manifest in culture through information sharing, through intelligence. What do we mean by the term feminine matrix of creation? We refer to the many lateral threads of information that weave together to give birth to a culture. The feminine principle doesn't necessarily create these threads, but it is the elasticity of the feminine that creates the weave. Culture is created by small groups, mostly of women, who come together to knit, to share dreams, to share wisdom, to cook, to feed each other's families. Our culture appears to be patriarchal, but the deep intelligence, the matrix on which it is built, comes through the feminine foundation. And this foundation is not built through bureaucracies or governments or organizations. It's built by the information sharing networks. I'm not talking about Facebook. I'm talking about the frequencies on which communication flows throughout a culture. Maybe this metaphor will help. We're born into this world and we walk on Mother Earth. We are literally in the vertical material world, walking on the horizontal matrix of information. We build these big tall buildings on her. We build these too big to fail bureaucracies on her. We create social hierarchies on her. But the bottom line is that the matrix of the earth, the mother matrix, is not vertical. It's a horizontal sharing of oneness. We all walk on that matrix. Now, there is an extent to which some women in America today are not understanding the power of the work of the Divine Feminine. Look at the Sarah Palins and Meg Whitmans and Carly Fiorinas and Jan Brewers and Michelle Bachmans and need I go on. They show up in leadership roles and abandon and betray their own feminine gifts. It's very interesting to me. Instead of doing the hard work of spiritual intelligence, they go for the much more superficial point A to point B thinking, unapologetic about lying, unreserved in their prejudices, unbridled in their hatred. However, the good news is that spiritual intelligence is starting to express itself in such a new way that ignorance within the past systems is crumbling the systems themselves. The internet, for example, makes information just available. Countless politicians have self-destructed by lying and getting caught because they didn't know about YouTube, which has them recorded. So their lies are immediately revealed. And these same politicians rather cavalierly brag that they don't know how to use the internet. Whoa. The internet is a spiritual technology because it works on the oneness principle. On the internet, everything is ever present in every moment. So intelligence itself, the spiritual principle itself, evolves from knowing and accessing data, our old definition, into the ability to find what we need in any moment because it is indeed present. Have you noticed that literally everyone, not just we boomers who are aging, but every demographic, is complaining about memory loss? I honestly believe we're undergoing a culture-wide rewiring and that memorizing, is becoming extinct. We're losing our memories, the old definition, because knowing doesn't require memorization anymore. A new spiritual tool for accessing the data has been given to us. Through the internet, the flow of data becomes the flow of life knowledge. This frees our nervous system up from having to send little data information messages around all the time to a much vaster possibility, the possibility of knowing the oneness of life. Other technologies will come, perhaps not in our lifetimes, but soon. And this A plus B equals C world is going to shift into an A through Z simultaneously all the time, everywhere world. If you saw that movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, a few years ago, you saw a very cute and well-done animated model of how certain peptides unlock certain receptor cells in our bodies to allow for the flow of information. Now, in this film, they were talking about peptides that unlock behavioral patterns that lead to addiction. And biologically, this has been proved. But spiritually, something very similar is true. Practitioners who reach a certain level of purity during their many hours of practice function as those receptor cells. They become like centers on the human grid through which spiritual energy can flow and access the realm of form. These people function as something like faucets for the principle of intelligence. Now, I have a little example for you. I've become accustomed to hearing spiritual teachers refer to and use almost word for word the same descriptions of certain principle ideas that I published years ago. Now, some of these teachers I know have read my work, and if I know them well enough, I call them out on their use of my words. What used to be called plagiarism. From some, I got apologies and corrections. From some, I got excuses like, oh, I really thought of that idea in the early 90s, long before you published it, but I just had never written it down. So, okay, whatever. Then I read a book by Reuben Neiman, which is called The Healing Night, The Science and Spirit of Sleeping, Dreaming, and Awakening. Many of his words are just like mine. And I knew he hadn't read my work. So I called him. We met for lunch. We talked about how we got our information. And I realized we were simply being fed from the same intelligence flow. Both of us are serious spiritual practitioners. And I realized that we had sort of tuned into the same river of information. And then recently I read a book by Jacob Needleman, which is called What is God? Not who is God, but what is God? And again, this book is published just last year. And he's referring, often in the very same vocabulary, to teachings I've only taught in my mystery school retreats. These teachings have not been written down and published. He did not plagiarize them. He couldn't have. We're faucets from the same flow of information. Intelligence works through certain portals based on how much spiritual practice that person has done. And what level of purification he or she has reached. So different people receive information in different ways. I'm certainly not maintaining that my way is the only way, but I'm suggesting that intelligence looks for human receptor cells. Intelligence uses any vehicle it can find. I'm no avatar, except in video games, of course. I've not reached a level that you would call enlightened, but I have some things to say, as do you. Learning to recognize what intelligence wants to express through us is a lifelong and quite fun little game. My years of spiritual practice have become the peptide that opened me as a spiritual receptor cell. How about your practice? Are you learning to be intelligence? Now my favorite topic, knitting. Well, actually today I'm not going to talk about knitting as much as about knitters. I've been describing the matrix of culture as a feminine energy that undergirds society. Well, knitters are an outpicturing of that very phenomenon. Now, you guy knitters, don't get all weird on me. I'm not saying that knitting is exclusively women's work, any more than I'm saying that the matrix only applies to women. I'm just saying that knitting is a perfect metaphor for the interweaving of the threads that create a diverse culture into an indivisible whole, where information is shared not through the media, but through the energetic threads that connect us. Knitters, and fiber lovers in general, are the most generous, least greedy, most industrious, least lazy, most outrageous, least threatened, and most talkative group of people I've ever encountered. Like music, knitting is a universal language. Like diplomacy, it unites. When knitters share, a web is cast. Now, I have a perfect example. It's a website called Ravelry.com. If you've never been there, go. It's a social networking site for fiber lovers of all kinds, although it appears to me that knitters rule there. Even if you have no intention of joining, and even if you're not a knitter, it's just amazing to see. I have no idea how many people are actually members, but I can tell you that last month they asked for volunteers to help categorize and catalog patterns, and they had 23,500 volunteers who categorized 160,000 patterns for fun. That kind of information sharing is unheard of on the more me networks, where you have to swim through what I had for breakfast and what my cat did to find anything substantial. This network is a unique combination of me and you. I and thou, if you will. You can organize your projects, upload pictures of your work, find patterns, find yarn, keep a list of your own yarn stash, and needles of your own. All that is the me part. But there are also groups and wikis and forums and chats and access to pictures of other people's projects that make it a thou, I and thou community. Ravelry is a beautiful example of the way information spreads laterally throughout the fiber community. There's no meanness on Ravelry, no reason to hurt each other, no alternative motives, no ugliness, no nationality boundaries, just joyful, creative people enthusiastically sharing. The matrix becomes visible. But there's always the dark side, isn't there? Ravelry, as far as I can tell, doesn't have a dark side, but the knitting business does. It's called capitalism. The recent, in fact, in the last 5 or 6 years or so, the recent upswing of the popularity of knitting has evoked the money changers. Yarn has become extremely expensive, and as is always the case, the truly creative people, the pattern designers and the knitters themselves, are on the short end of that stick. Friends who are now pattern designers tell me they're getting much less now, maybe half, for selling a pattern to a knitting magazine than they got in the 80s. Paying less and charging more has become the rule of thumb for pattern publishers and store owners. Ugh. A few weeks ago, I was working on a project and I ran out of yarn, and I went to a local store and asked if they had it. They didn't. I asked if they could order it for me. The owner of the store actually said to me, "If you can prove that you originally bought this yarn from me, I'll order it for you. But why should I support your buying yarn at someone else's store?" Not only did that logic make no sense to me, but it ended my relationship with that store forever. Okay, so here's the best part. I came home, went to Ravelry.com, typed in the name of the yarn, and up came several people who had it listed in their stash. I sent a Ravelry message to the one who lived closest to me and asked her if she would sell me a skein, and she responded, "No, but you can have one. I'm happy to give it to you." See what I mean? Knitters are so fabulous. People who try to make money off knitters can be as greedy as the next guy. That said, I want to plug two great places. One is a store near me called Wild Fiber. It's in Santa Monica, California, and I've been going there for many, many years, and never once have I been greeted with anything but enthusiastic hellos and what feels like open arms. Their yarns are not inexpensive, but their generosity flows like a great river. And the other is a website called knitpicks.com. Their prices are incredibly affordable, and their yarns are of pretty high quality. It's a little scary in the beginning to order yarns that you can't feel, but if you hold your nose and dive in, pretty soon you'll have ordered enough of their various options to know what you're getting. Then you order with confidence. And by the way, owner Kelly Petkin does a bi-weekly podcast, which is really fun to listen to. Okay, so all I'm saying is that when you think of the principle of intelligence, think of knitters. Think how information gets shared unselfishly, whether it's advice about where to get yarn, how to do certain stitches, how to correct errors, patterns, techniques, or just chatter. That's how intelligence works in your body. Information is gathered from every one of your senses and shared freely and indiscriminately throughout your cells. Intelligence is not about memorizing data and regurgitating it. Spiritual intelligence is about gathering threads of truth and knitting them into your own invisible garment. This section we call the politics of ethical behavior. That's what I like to talk about with people these days because we are so horribly mentally bound up, in the United States at least, by the lies that politicians and corporations weave for us that we lose our ability to actually make ethical decisions. Our choices are too often made relative to the choices of others rather than weighed against the feather of truth and rooted in the correct gathering and distributing of accurate information. Why shouldn't I cheat? They're cheating. Why shouldn't I lie? They're lying. If your ethical principle is intelligence, then you are morally bound to evaluate your decisions based on accurate data rather than on your gut reaction. I'm going to use just one example, Martin Luther King Jr. I've had several different astrological charts on Dr. King, and depending on the birth time that various astrologers use, we get different indications of what his ethical principle was. But at least one that I've seen, which uses an early afternoon birth time, gives his principle as intelligence. I tend to believe this, as I have studied his writings fairly carefully, and I see this tendency of his to gather information, to measure it against truth, and to make his decisions accordingly. Listen to these statements from his letter from the Birmingham City Jail. He had been jailed for his participation in a nonviolent civil disobedience demonstration in Birmingham, Alabama, in April of 1963. 8 prominent all-white Christian ministers had published an open letter in the paper condemning Dr. King's actions. While he rarely addressed his critics directly, he felt an urgency this time to demonstrate to these so-called Christians that Christian discipleship was at the heart of the African-American struggle for freedom. Given the conversation that's going on in the United States right now about minorities, about gay people, about Islamic people, I think you'll find these words to be particularly pertinent and powerful. He speaks to us of extremism. He says, "I have gained a bit of satisfaction from being considered an extremist. Was not Jesus an extremist in love? He said, 'Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, pray for them that despitefully use you.' Was not Amos an extremist for justice? He said, 'Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.' Was not Paul an extremist for the gospel of Jesus Christ? He said, 'I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? He said, "Here I stand, I can do none other, so help me God." Was not John Bunyan an extremist? He said, "I will stay in jail to the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience." Was not Abraham Lincoln an extremist? "This nation cannot survive half slave and half free." Was not Thomas Jefferson an extremist? "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? Will we be extremists for hate, or will we be extremists for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice, or will we be extremists for the cause of justice? In that dramatic scene on Calvary's Hill, three men were crucified. We must not forget that all three were crucified for the same crime, the crime of extremism. Two were extremists for immorality and thusly fell below their environment. The other, an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and thereby rose above his environment. So, after all, the nation and the world are in dire need of creative extremists. I had hoped that the moderate white would see this. Maybe I was too optimistic. Martin Luther King's words speak directly to what's going on with us right now. Ethical decisions, truly moral decisions, in this time are extremist decisions. And I encourage you to be an ethical extremist. I'm just saying. This week I received the following note from a client from 1999. Long before I published The Invisible Garment, I had looked up her principles and given her an overview of her contract with life. She reports that at the time, the information meant a lot to her, but like so many people have reported, the pages got put away somewhere and the information faded from her mind. And just recently, she found the pages again. Here's what she said. "It's amazing how much more I've grown into my own principles now that I'm divorced. The kids don't need so much from me, and I'm able to live more authentically. It's truly beautiful to look at this reading and see how fully I've bloomed into who I am. I now live a life of service to others who struggle with the aftermath of divorce. I run a social group for them, just published a book on divorce recovery, just held a conference downtown, and now I'm working on a TV show. It's been a whirlwind of creativity and blossoming." This is not an uncommon letter. I really want you to hear this. Your spiritual practice is the most important thing that you do. No matter how caught up you get in the little mundane or even the big gargantuan details of life, if you let your spiritual practice slide, you pay a price. Now, in the case of the friend who sent me this note, her principles took over in spite of her life. If you're lucky, and if you're not so willful that you override it, you'll be guided gently back to the realization that your invisible garment never betrays you. These principles slip in the back door of your consciousness when you are meditating or otherwise silent enough to let spirit enter. They come into your inner kitchen and become the ingredients that nourish your life. Too often, unless we undergo a tragedy or a serious life-changing event, we simply make willful decisions ignoring our own spiritual best self and opting for worldly doingness that seems right at the time. Dropping our spiritual practice in favor of getting the job done. Too often, our return to spiritual practice has to come in the form of high drama. Death of a loved one, divorce, job loss, illness, etc. I'm telling you, take your practice seriously, my friend. Don't drop it because you're too busy. Drop your busyness instead. As always, thanks to Kevin Brennan for the music. Be sure to visit his website and purchase his music at his website at www.fboo.com. F as in Frank, boo as in boo-boo. The link for the Intelligence Newsletter will be in the program notes for this podcast. When you go to the turtledreamers.com homepage and click on podcasts, you'll see the menu of all of my podcasts. On the page that contains the podcast notes, there is an opportunity to make comments. Please use this link liberally. We love the comments and discussions that evolve from them. Also on the website homepage, please notice the donation button. If you like these podcasts and would like to help me bear the expense of making them, your donations are mightily appreciated. And while you're at the website, be sure and visit the free dream space and see what we're dreaming into existence this week and contribute your own dreams and thoughts. All of my books and products are also available through the website, so click on the store icon and check it out. And now for the surprise ending. You know, I talk about the amazing Kevin Brennan in every podcast because he created this music. I thought today you'd like to hear one of his pieces. From his album, Stand in the Light, here's Kevin singing Save Your Soul.
From a limb of an oak, I am the I, the cross, the T. I wait for stars to come out for you, revolve around me. Somewhere behind me is an army, I presume. Walking on water, sloshing through the blues for you. Imagine me a night on tapestry. Story spun from gold, and you in bed been found again, sleeping soundfully. Somewhere behind me is an army, I presume, walking on water, slashing through the blues, revving their engines and shoveling the coal. But I'm not the one to save your soul. A storm is hurling, curling, I am a voice, a wound, a way. Limbs and lips lose their grip, go a separate way. Somewhere behind me is an army, walking on water, sloshing through the blues, revving their engines and shoveling the coal. But I'm not the one to save your soul. Thank you.
Until next time, sweet dreams.